All right, everyone, it's Wednesday, the middle morning briefing of the week from the Celtic Way. And after minutes and minutes and minutes of technical issues and mic testing and Tony just dropping off for about a minute, we're here. Hello, guys. Tony, Ryan, we're back together. And we're ready to talk about whatever comes up over the next half an hour or so. How are things?
Things are all good. Yeah, enjoyed my day off yesterday, but happy to be back as always. Hopefully the show yesterday was good. And now I'm back and we'll talk about probably anything that comes to mind. I think the comments section will be quite helpful today, in which we'll find out what people want to talk about. You know, we're at Wednesday, the game isn't till Sunday. This is what happens when there's no midweek games, but there's always plenty to talk about regarding Celtic, and I'm sure we'll get through it without any white noise or anything like that, or any blank space, whatever you want to call it.
You hope.
I'll wait till you hear me speaking. That's all that comes out of my mouth is white noise. Yeah.
Green and white noise, people would label that, Hamish, you know, something like that. But yeah, listen, another day, we get to talk about Celtic and enjoy it, and yeah. Guys, if you want to throw in your comments in the section, we'll certainly bring some chat up if that's the case. But yeah, listen, what is it, Wednesday, Thursday? 4 days till Dundee.
It sounds good.
You know, everybody's getting excited about this, the five-game stretch. I'm parking the Scottish Cup final, five-game stretch to win the title. Let's do it. Bring it on, as they say.
It's a double header on Sunday as well. I don't know if people know this, but St Mirren Rangers is up first, I think at 12:30, and then we're at Dundee at 3 p.m. Fun afternoon in front of the, well, for some of us, in front of the old tellies. I guess you guys might be otherwise engaged, but I think it's going to be a fun Sunday. Yeah, we'll maybe come to that in a minute. I'll get the sponsor stuff out the way, and there's a few other stories we can maybe talk about as well. And as both guys have said, if you've got anything in particular, a topic you want to raise, even if it's Bojan Miovski related, we'll maybe take that on. A big thanks to MPH Boilers and Weissmann for sponsoring this video. As you know, Weissmann are a global leader in the boiler industry. MPH Boilers have the award-winning local touch, let's just say. So those two have teamed up, and it's your big chance to get world-class engineering with local expert service through Weissmann and MPH Boilers. Thanks to them for sponsoring this video. Still get this offer?
Certainly do. Still got it running. 6 months of access for £1, plus Kyogo Furuhashi print from renowned football artist made by Frankie. If you visit www.celticway.co.uk /subscribe and get involved. We thank everybody that's joined us thus far. We really do appreciate your participation and your pledging £1 for the next 6 months. If you pledge £1 just now, you'll be sorted until right towards the end of October. So that'll be all through the summer. All the scouting reports you'll get for the players at Celtic hopefully sign, which hopefully be a few players, as well as a pre-season tour of the USA. That'll be getting covered on the website too. If you're looking for any sort of Celtic content look no further than the Celtic Way, www.celticway.co.uk /subscribe, and thank you to everybody that's joined us so far.
Any update on the US trip, Tony?
No, not yet, but nah. Don't worry.
No news is bad news in this case.
Well, I'm trying to piece together an itinerary, something like that. One of those words that people find hard to say, an itinerary, yeah. And we'll take it from there, but it could come in at cost of plenty dollars. So we'll see what happens. But no, you know me, I'd love to go. I'm not putting a cowboy hat on just yet or anything like that, but hey, we'll see how it goes.
I think regardless of if we go or not, I think we'll be staying up for the pre-season games because they'll be at silly o'clock.
Not for me. I always think
you'll be in prime time, I get that, but it's I always quite like staying up for these games. I always looked forward to watching these games when I was on holiday as well, you know, because the bars would be open a bit later. I always remember watching, I think it was Celtic v Southampton in America, I seem to remember, years and years and years ago, but it was on at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and it was mental because all the bars were shutting around, but this one was just opening up for the game. It was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, it's good for the fans that are there. They'll be able to experience Celtic in a normal time for them, but for us, we may just have to make the adjustments, which is absolutely fine, especially if it's pre-season.
Well, I spent Saturday's penalty shootout outside KFC watching it on my phone as the people I'd been with on my night out went in to get some food. So that's how it's a kind of a big round world, and different time zones mean different things. Yeah, it was very stressful. I don't know how you two did it sober. I'm assuming you would have been sober. I don't know how you managed that because it was horrendous on Saturday. Anyway, yeah, a few things happening. Bit of chat online about the Scottish Cup final and when that's actually going to take place on May the 25th. I believe, long story short, it's been reported that it's going to be staying at 3 p.m. Obviously, they changed the kickoff last year, you may remember, for the Inverness Cup final due to the Manchester Derby taking place at 3. We ended up playing after it at 5:30. I think that was the BBC's request. This year, a repeat isn't going to happen. They're going to go head-to-head, they think, with the Manchester Derby. So Glasgow Derby, Manchester Derby. I guess that's the right decision when it is confirmed, Tony. 3 o'clock. You don't get many derbies at 3 o'clock, never mind cup final, so it's going to be special.
I'm a traditionalist. That's back to the halcyon days of the Scottish Cup final and the FA Cup final running concurrently. And then when you used to show the highlights from Wembley, you thought it was glorious technical, and what you were watching was black and white. You know what I mean? The two stadiums are just so vastly different. And you kind of lost interest if your team wasn't in the final. Because if you weren't in the final, then you weren't there. You were watching it at home. But listen, I love that. And don't move it. I don't want any kind of lobby for moving it. Keep them there. Traditional Saturday climax to the season. A Manchester Derby in the FA Cup final and a Glasgow Derby in the Scottish Cup final. What more could you want? What a day of football. And that'll just, you know, that'll, it's a throwback to growing up watching football when you'll watch Celtic against Rangers and then you'll see the highlights from Manchester United, Manchester City at half-time. I love that. All I wish you could bring the kind of old presenters back for a day and present it, you know, from like 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. Oh. When you used to build it up all day, and you'd have all sorts of things. You'd have the road to the final. You'd have like the sometimes they, I think they in England they used to go on the team bus, didn't they? They'd send like reporters on the team bus and stuff like that. See all that kind of stuff. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Hmm. Do you remember the League Cup final just a few years ago? The one when Julian scored the winner. Again, you guys might or might not remember, but I think it would have been Premier Sports, maybe BT actually, covering that game at that stage. They started their coverage extremely early. I think they started at like 9 a.m, 10 a.m. They had Rio Ferdinand up for some reason doing coverage of the game, and they had the whole kind of breakfast thing, and that was strange. They did that as a one-off. I'm pretty sure it was BT. It'd be amazing if they could, you know, even the BBC [S2] Yeah. [S1] Could sort something like that. I think it's such a shame that that's no longer a thing, but Ryan actually had to double check the kickoff last year was 5:30 because it was so warm. Do you remember how warm last year's cup final was? And I was thinking, like, how is it that warm at like 6:30? It was remarkable. But you don't really think of the kickoff time, do you?
I think I just must get drained with Scottish Cup games, especially stressful Scottish Cup games. Now that game last year wasn't stressful, but what happened after it was stressful for me because I could see the body language in Ange Postecoglou, and I turned to my dad after the game and I was like, he's off. You know, you could just see it the way he was waving to the fans. I just had a funny feeling. Wasn't even 48 hours and he was gone, or reported to be gone. So, yeah, I mean, it was draining. It was a draining day. It was absolutely scorching. I was talking to fans before the game, walking about outside Hampden. Had some technical issues because the connection, the internet connection and mobile connection is absolutely dreadful in that stadium. But I was speaking to fans before the game, and by the time you were at your seat, you were absolutely shattered. And it was just a long day and it turned into a long night as well. But thankfully, there wasn't that much stress during the game. I know that Inverness scored, but Celtic got the trophy at the end of the day. And Saturday was quite stressful as well. More stressful than that game, I would say, for sure. Just due to the extra time, the penalties. But yeah, you always feel it's more draining being at Hampden because it's knockout football. You're either in it or you're out of it. So yeah, it was a bit more stressful on Saturday than last year, I would say, but it was absolutely scorching, you're right.
Yeah, hell of a day. Back to 3 o'clock this year. Expect that to be confirmed, I would say, in the next few days. Did you see the story, guys, that the UEFA have announced their team of officials for the Euros in the summer? And no Scottish officials have been chosen as part of the team of 90, I believe. Obviously, not all of those 90 are referees, but that includes the linesmen and VAR officials. Is that a surprise, Tony, that no Scottish officials have been included?
My first words were going to be, Kel, surprise. No, it's not a surprise, is it? We've spent all season berating them, calling them things like incompetent. And yeah, so no, it's not a surprise. And it just kind of highlights, doesn't it, that it doesn't augur well for our game and no representatives at all. So yeah, I think that's a damning indictment of the SFA and the man that's about to leave. That tells you everything you need to know, that we've always banged on about it, that we just feel that the officials are not up to scratch. Well, there you go. There's the proof. Not one representative going. So, yeah, read what you want into that, and everybody will. But it tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
I mean, like, yeah, there's obviously the big countries are represented, England, Spain, Germany, etc. But, you know, countries like Poland, Turkey, Switzerland, Romania, similar, you know, size countries to Scotland. Yep. Arguably, Scotland should have a better refereeing kind of system than some of these countries, because it's probably been going on a hell of a lot longer. And Argentina even have a ref at this tournament. They're not even in Europe, but you know, no Willie Collum, no John Beaton, no Don Robertson, etc. We will have John Beaton this weekend, though. Again, I know we kind of mentioned this when it came out yesterday. Monty, just wondering, why are the Celtic board accepting the appointment of John Beaton for our games? Do they not like a fight? It's pretty well documented. I think the Rangers, I don't know if Rangers said publicly, but it's certainly understood that Rangers said they didn't want Willie Collum to referee their games. And I think he's had one game since they said that, and it was a cup tie against lower league opposition. Should Celtic be publicly saying they don't want John Beaton, or is what we're doing best? You know, we're not going too far, we're kind of getting on with it and still getting positive results. Do you have a thought on this? Because it is interesting, Ryan, that John Beaton seems to be getting pretty much all of our away games at the moment.
Yeah, he seems to be getting our games, whether he's on VAR or he's actually taken to the field. Don Robertson as well. It seems to be all the usual suspects, the same ones that seem to have been giving Celtic problems over the past. I mean, you look at that game at Hearts just last month. I can't believe it's been just a month or a bit since that game. It feels as if it's been longer due to the amount of time that people have been talking about it. But I don't really have that much of an opinion on the referees. It's one of those ones that I take it game by game. I know that they're not great. I think the fact that UEFA haven't brought any in, the fact, as you said, that they're bringing in an Argentinian referee or official instead of a European official, shows that maybe it's not just Scotland where they're not incompetent or not up to standard, but in other places as well, the fact that they need to go to other federations to fulfil those spots. You know, I was looking at the list there. There's referees from like Slovenia and Poland, you know, leagues that are maybe not even as good as the Scottish league, and yet they've got representatives. It shows that something is not working. Maybe that's the reason that Crawford Allen's stepping down and somebody else will take his place. Who that'll be is yet to be seen, or yet to be found out. But yeah, I just if Celtic are good enough on the day, then I don't think the referee matters. But it's all about not allowing the game to get into a situation where the referee is making big decisions that could go against Celtic. Celtic play their game, then the referee's just a sideshow. But we know that they're not good enough. I think everybody knows that they're not good enough. All the teams in the country know that they need to be improved upon. But if Celtic play their game, then it shouldn't matter what the referee does on the day, because, I mean, Jock Stein was saying that, 40, 50 years ago, if Celtic are good enough, then the referee doesn't matter. Don't let the referee have an impact on the game. That's kind of my view on it. I don't really want to go down the route of particular referees and all of that. But yeah, if Celtic are good enough, then the referee doesn't matter.
But they can impact the game, Ryan, by being incompetent. That's the whole point. They can make game-changing, title-deciding decisions. That's the whole point that we're trying to make here. Mm-hmm. These guys have far more power than anything in this. And this title could be decided by VAR, VAR, whatever you want to call it, or an incompetent official. So, I mean, it's a bit more than just, if Celtic are good enough. Celtic are good enough to win this title. I think that you ask Canvas, the Celtic supporters, they will see this team is good enough to win this title. Their biggest bugbear or problem at the minute is their mistrust of officials because of things that have happened this season. Surely.
Yeah.
See, for me, just quickly, I wouldn't want them to go down the route of penning a letter and saying we don't want a specific referee. I don't want to be on that same boat. I wouldn't want Celtic to go down that route whatsoever. But it does seem as if since Brendan Rodgers has made those comments, John Beaton seems to be getting most games that Celtic are involved with, which is quite... It might not be most, but it feels like most of the games. It feels like John Beaton is a part of them. Maybe that's just down to the sideshow that came after the Hearts game. Everybody was talking about him, and it seems that whenever he is linked with Celtic in a game, it's the talking point. It's one of the main talking points going into the game. It just feels as if Celtic are getting him a lot. Brendan Rodgers said it. I thought he said it quite well, that he's a top referee. I don't know if he was putting a bit of pressure on the official, but for me, you know, the referee's the referee. Celtic have got to take it out of their hands. I know that they can impact the games, but I don't want the games to be tight. I want Celtic to show their A game and blow teams out of the water, to be honest.
I just think it's interesting that he keeps kind of getting our games. When, you know, across the city, they clearly made a very public thing about, you know, Willie Collum, and he no longer tends to get their games. I think that for me is the interesting. But I don't want to spend ages on this, but Tony, if you want to make a final point, you can.
I'm just saying that's another anomaly, isn't it?
Yeah.
That Willie Collum's had a cup tie against Ayr United since Rangers complained. And Celtic complained about Don Robertson and John Beaton have had both in two of the last three outings. Read what you want into that. Another anomaly. And yeah.
Moving on, did you see the story Celtic looking to appoint a replacement for Stuart McLaren? Now, he was the under-18s boss. He left around 3 months ago, I must say. Maybe I was busy doing something else in January, but I missed that completely. It probably was reported at the time. He was under-18s boss, I said. He's moved on, and the club are now looking for a replacement. Two names been floated around in the media last night. Charlie Mulgrew is one. Johnny Hayes is the other. Mulgrew retired at the end of last season. I think anyone who's followed his stuff recently, whether it be on Instagram, on Open Goal, where I think he was on this week, we'll know that he's planning a big career, certainly a career in management. He's very open about that. Johnny Hayes is still playing, not really featuring, but he still is officially a player for Aberdeen. He's been taking Aberdeen's under-16s this season. So two people who have their eye on coaching, and two people apparently linked or certainly linked with this Celtic under-18s job. Any thoughts on this? Any preference? Any worries about it being just former Celtic players thrown in there?
This is something that I can talk about more than the referees, to be honest. What players have they brought through in the past 3 to 4 years? Where is their track record of bringing through talent from the under-18s to the B team or the B team to the first team? If they don't have a track record, then why are they getting brought in? I think there's
good coaches positions, and they've got experience of playing for Celtic.
Yeah, but they've got Darren Adey and Steve McManus that have already done that. I think there needs to be a mix between the two. I've got nothing against the two players. Two really good servants for Celtic. I would like some people that are maybe not as connected with the club coming in that can maybe bring something different to the table. People that have got experience of being in those jobs, maybe in other leagues around the world. I don't want to go into the jobs for the boys, but that seems to be what the case is. You know, seems not cronyism, but I would want people that are disconnected, that have done the job before in other places, rather than bringing in people that we know and people that you know how they operate as in terms of a player or as a coach before. I'd much rather have somebody that's disconnected, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I thought the CEO told us at the AGM that they would strive to have a world-class team and world-class kind of organisation in all these positions. Does that not fall into that category then? You try and get the best. From what I deduce from that is that we're going to try and get the best people available within Celtic's financial parameters for these jobs. Is Charlie Mulgrew and Johnny Hayes the best persons available for the under-18s jobs? I don't know. But it smacks to me of kind of a bit lazy, doesn't it? That they're available and they played for Celtic and have got a handle on the club, but can we not invite people to apply for that job and then, unlike Peter Lowell, open the draw and see what CVs are there and see what calibre of candidate comes forward? It's an important job that, as Ryan says, you know, you're under 18s then, your B team then. You know, when was the last person that saw that and used it all as a stepping stone into the first team? We've gotten away from that a fair bit, haven't we? I think that it's a crucially important role at Celtic. You need to try and employ the best people in that circumstance. And I don't really know much about Charlie Mulgrew's coaching ability or Johnny Hayes. They might well be the best people for the job, but put them through the rigorous process and see if they are. Do your due diligence, Hamish, in these things and get the best people available. And you know, as the CEO said, they strive to be world-class in everything that they do.
Yeah, I get your points. I get kind of how it looks. And I know it was the same with O'Day and McManus, wasn't it? And I feel like there was someone else hanging around there recently as well that was of a similar ilk. I actually think, looking at it, and obviously we don't know a great deal about either of them, I think based on, you know, the way he's kind of, I've heard him speak on coaching and tactical matters and how he wants his teams to play, I think Charlie Mulgrew may actually be a decent appointment if we go down that route. For me, I mean, I need to find out more about it, but the under-18s boss for me, you know, it would be about development. That's what you'd be looking for. And I think Mulgrew, in terms of, you know, his history playing for the club and the way he wants his teams to play, would be quite well aligned with what we'd be looking for. I then think you're looking at the other roles, like head of the youth academy, Chris McCart. He's the one kind of tasked with actually overseeing the whole things and seeing how many players can get up. Mulgrew would, or you know, even someone like Steve McManus is basically only coaching players to get better. You've also got Darren O'Day now in this professional player pathway manager role. You've got Stevie Hamill, who's their head of academy coaching. So there's a lot of different people doing different roles there, and it's clear that the club are restructuring things at present, with O'Day's new role actually being a totally new role that's been created for O'Day. So long story short, I think Mulgrew would maybe turn out to be a pretty good appointment, given what I've heard them say so far. I'm less sure about Hayes because I just don't know about Johnny Hayes. I didn't even know Johnny Hayes had gone into coaching. I had no idea of that. I mean, is it that enticing a job that you would be able to get someone else from overseas, for example, coming in to do it? Or is it the kind of job that kind of quite well suited to someone like Charlie Mulgrew starting his career?
It could well be. I've just got the thing in my head is, you know, I want other jobs to not be those sort of hand-picked jobs for people. Like, I think the Mark Lowell appointment is still stinging, to be honest, and the fact that he's away from the club. I think in that position, I think maybe that's maybe how I'm feeling about that under-18 job, and it might be a good fit for a player that's played for Celtic before. Charlie Mulgrew, you know, he's had a good career. He does speak really well whenever he's doing punditry as well. I think he's one of the better pundits on the Scottish circuit at the moment, certainly. So, yeah, I guess if he's ready to take that step with under 18s, I think it's more in other sectors, like the head of recruitment. I don't think it'll watch if he's got a surname that we've heard.
For me, that's very different. I agree. I think, you know, head of recruitment, key, and I know this is an important role as well, but I'm talking about these roles having the same surname as the chief executive.
It's not going to wash anymore.
Stinks.
Yeah.
Stinks. I don't care how you... Yeah.
And like you guys, I've been very impressed with Charlie Mulgrew. Spoke to him recently as well, and I think he comes across very well, and as Ryan said there, he's one of the better pundits there, but if he's the best man for the job, then he'll interview well and he'll get it, won't he? I just want to put him up against people and let Charlie Mulgrew prove that he's the right man for the job. Just put him through those rigorous processes and due diligence. And, you know, you can't cut corners on these appointments at any stage or any level of Celtic Football Club, in my opinion. So I think that Charlie might well prove himself to be the best candidate for this Hamish at this juncture of his coaching career. But let him do that. Don't just appoint him because he's available and he sounds good and he's got some coaching experience behind him, or he took his badges. You know, advertise it properly. Let people come and want that job and see what caliber of candidate and CV you get, and take it from there. And if it's Charlie's, then it's Charlie's. So be it. I'll be happy with that. But as long as the processes have taken place, and you don't just wake up one day and on the website Charlie McGrew's been installed as the under-18s coach. You know, let people interview properly for these jobs.
Yeah, and I guess it's about having or aiming to have trust in the club to do that. But the issue would be that over recent years, in some of the most high-profile appointments, like literally the manager, a number of years ago we were told that they didn't bother to look at the filing cabinet with all the things because he knew the city and all that stuff. So when that's always in the background, it's hard to kind of go in with a... I mean, my personal take is I think Charlie Mulgrew would be a really good appointment if the club can get it over the line, but we don't even know if that's what's happening. Celtic always saying, how do you know he was handpicked? I was under the impression that interviews were done. I certainly think interviews would be done in some way, but as I say, we don't know as supporters, that's the thing. Turnakish saying, Ari, the appointment of a new under-18 coach, it should be the best coach we can get, not a former old boy. Dennis, let's move it on. Dennis saying, who plays at left wing for Sunday? Guys, I know what Tony's going to say, because he's going all in on James Forrest. And I must say, Tony, I agree with you. I think James Forrest should start on Sunday.
I agree too.
You're not being wise after the event. He came on.
You agree, Ryan?
Biggest, exactly.
Got to play the best players in the best game. And he's the best left winger at the moment, so...
And what an impact they had on Saturday. And there was a clamour from yourself and myself, Hamish, to get him in the team to start on Saturday. I wish he had started on Saturday. But he came on and he did what every substitute should do and make that impact. Because we've spoken extensively about Yang, but Forrest, for an hour at least, if you can get an hour out of Forrest at Dench Park on Sunday, then he has to start. Because he carries that goal threat as well. And he's just wise, isn't he? He's what, a wily old campaigner. He's 32, but he's picked up a wealth of knowledge, wisdom and experience, and just knows what to do. You know, take the ball for a run. You know, I mean, the first thing he did when he came on at Hampden was, I'm having a go at the Aberdeen defence here. Shot was, like, deflected away, but panic stations. Next thing he did was score. He just understood from the moment he came on, he had to make an impact, because Yang's time on the park wasn't productive in any shape or form. And he did more in 3 minutes than Yang did in, what, 60 minutes or whatever, however long he got in the park. And you're thinking, okay. So for me, he still was an important part to play, just for his experience alone, Hamish, and being able to calm things down and just use that wise head. You know, and also he's, what's he got now? 22 medals. I think it's the same as Scott Brown, isn't it? He needs one more medal to eclipse Scott Brown's total of medals. And I think he is the definition of an unsung hero at Celtic. He really is, James Forrest. And he still, as I say, he starts for me on Saturday, basically.
For me, he's
Sunday, sorry.
As you said, I don't know if you said that there, but you know what you're going to get with him. I think for me that I love James Forrest. I think there's always been a question about the really big games, you know, derbies, European games. Is he going to impact them? Sometimes he does. I remember one of his best games ever against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. You know, he's been good against Rangers on occasion. Other games have passed him by. I think in games like Sunday, invariably you know what you're going to get from him. And we don't know what we're going to get from Yang at the moment. We really don't. Yang could be brilliant on Sunday. Yang could be incredibly poor. If anything, I'd be leaning towards the latter. Palma, kind of similar, to be honest. It's been a while since Palma's put in a really good performance. I think James Forrest, for me, is quite obviously the best option out of those three. I think there's still big question marks over his fitness. Can he impact a game in the same way as he's done recently, having started it? But I think we want to find out. And as you said, Tony, it's only 60 minutes as well, probably. It's not as if we're asking him to play 90. Yeah, any thoughts on that, Ryan, or even centre-back? If you get any thoughts, you can speak about either of them.
I do agree with Tony. I think James Forrest should start the game, absolutely. Sometimes it's better than maybe having the athleticism than having... It's better off to have somebody that's careful with the ball. And at the moment, Yang and Palmer are both not very careful on the ball, and they give away possession too easily, whether that be passing it to the opposition that Palmer did, which caused the equaliser in injury time, which was inexplicable, to be honest. It was ridiculous when it happened. I've watched it back 5 or 6 times and it gets worse every time I've watched. I don't even know what he's trying to do. Or Yang, who looks a bit like a youth player coming into the first team at times. Sometimes he looks good, sometimes he looks like he can bring something, other times he's an empty jersey, unfortunately. So you're better off having that safe pair of hands or feet, as James Forrest would use. You're better off having him in the team. You know, I think he looks pretty fit at the moment. Yes, he can't do 90 minutes, but he seems to have that bit of dynamism. Aberdeen didn't know what to do with him when he came on. He showed that he still had a wee bit of speed about him. He maybe has lost half a yard or a yard of pace, but he still can motor about the pitch at a fairly good speed, which is quite good. That's a terrible sentence. On the centre-backs, it's got to be Navrovsky on Sunday.
Okay. Do you think it will be?
No.
I've got my doubts.
No, in all honesty.
I think Scales will play.
I think Scales is bulletproof at this moment under Brendan Rodgers from now until the end of the season. He keeps on making mistakes, these wee mistakes, and he keeps on getting away with them. The only reason he didn't play last week, seemingly, is because he was injured. He got a knock. I don't understand what that means for Navrovsky in the summer. I'm not so sure. Celtic paid $4 million for him. He was the highest signing of the summer, of the whole transfer window. When you factor in January as well, he was the top signing. And you know, sometimes he struggles to get on the bench. I don't know what that means for his Celtic career going forward. If I could just make one more hot take, and it'd be in the midfield. I'm quite keen to see Bernardo get a chance in this team from the start once
again. Instead of?
I don't know necessarily who instead of, to be honest, but I think he's been good every time he's came onto the park over the past 3-4 weeks. He was good against Livingston and he scored. He was good against Rangers and he set up the assist for Ida's goal, which should have been the winner on the day. I thought he understood the assignment really well against Aberdeen when he came on. And he came on and scored a penalty. So I feel like he's not getting as much game time as I would like to see him get. I don't know if you take Iwata out and put Bernardo in and make it a more attacking midfield. I mean, I'd like to see Iwata stay in the team. This is the problem when you play 3 midfielders and there's still about 5 or 6 to keep happy in the team. I like the cut of his jib and I want to see more of Bernardo in the coming weeks. If that is as a sub and getting half an hour here and there, then absolutely fine. But I think he deserves a start because I think he's made a really good impact coming off the bench past 3-4 games.
Could always play 4-4-2, Ryan.
That'd be only 2 central midfielders.
Nah, play a narrow 4. Just fit 4 and do the box midfield.
I know we've not got wingers, but we need width in the team. It's the Callum McGregor question, isn't it?
Well, if you're putting Callum McGregor out of the team because we all think that he's still not match fit, are you wanting Bernardo in for Iwata? You know, people would say Iwata before Bernardo.
Just it's not going to happen, though. Thinking. But if you're going to need a deeper player. Yeah. McGregor or Iwata in that midfield. One of them has to play for me.
Yeah, it's got to be Iwata then out of the two, because Cal McGregor doesn't look fit yet. I think Celtic looked a lot more assured when Iwata came onto the pitch. And for me, he scored the best penalty out of a lot of them. So I think he's a safe.
It's another 8 days down the line for McGregor. Another 8 days down the line. I think McGregor will start personally. But I know people might think that's not the right idea. Listen, there's options there. We had, you know, shouts of Kyogo on the left, Ida up front. We had shout of Hitati on the left. Like, different ideas to kind of make this work. The left is clearly, I think the left is the issue in the entire team. Left wing, definitely. Left back, left centre back. Those are the three areas, I think, at the moment that are going to cause us a bit of concern. There's nothing we can do about left back. Greg Taylor's kind of...
Sorry, well, let's put it this way. Ryan was talking about what does it say for Navrovsky. If Navrovsky doesn't start on Sunday, then Celtic are open to offers for Navrovsky in the summer.
Agreed. Right?
That's the way you have to see that. Because
is there a risk that you just wouldn't change it at this time in the season? I'm not saying I agree with that, but...
The manager says it's the one of the positions, or you know, the centre back pairing. That he just he's risk averse, isn't he? He doesn't like changing it or chopping and changing. And there is that risk we don't want to particularly change it. But there is a school of thought that if Scales continues to play, then he'll cost you goals, and goals cost points.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. And I think Celtic fans are erring towards the fact that they can see an accident in Scales. So it's up to the manager to look at this week, the training, and decide. It's a huge call whether Mike Navrovsky's up to this challenge or not over the next five games. Or if he decides he's not, then he has to just stick with Scales. And I think most Celtic fans would be fingers crossed if it's Scales for the next five games. But again, I don't think a lot of them will be kind of like, but do we need to mix it up in terms of your centre backs? But it's again, that's why the manager gets paid the huge salary to make those calls. You throw it out there, but it is a concern. You can't run away from the fact that the centre half pairing is a concern.
I think it's a concern when it starts to impact Carter Vickers as well, and I think there was evidence of that
on Saturday.
So it's going to be interesting to see what Rodgers does, but he's got a few issues to contend with. You know, as we say, Scales or Naropsky, I think there is a big question over whether he plays McGregor, and obviously that left wing position. I really don't think we can see Yang start for a third match in a row, because his last two performances have been really, really poor. So, yeah, plenty of issues for Brendan Rodgers to think about, plenty of issues for us to discuss tomorrow and Friday as well. One final shout-out for this offer, 6 months of access for the Celtic Way for £1 plus a free Kyogo Furuhashi print from a renowned football artist made by Frankie. Thanks, guys, for your time. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, commenting, watching, etc. Speak to you tomorrow.